February 13th, 1947. Dear Mrs. White, here is, I am afraid, another unusable poem that I should like to get out of your way and mine. I am doing quite a bit of work these days, however, and have quite a large group almost done, one or two of which I feel you may like. Thank you so much for sending the things on to Mr. Jarrell. As soon as I finish the group I mentioned, I shall get to work on the prose. Sincerely yours, Elizabeth Bishop. February 17th. Dear Miss Bishop, we think that At the Fish Houses is a very beautiful poem, and one that we are delighted to be able to buy and use when summer comes. Far from being unusable, it has given us a great deal of pleasure. The check and proof will be along soon. I look forward to the large group of poems you speak of, and also the prose when you get to it. Sincerely, Catherine S. White. February 25th. Dear Miss Bishop, our proof room, which has a highly conventional idea of punctuation, had scores of punctuation queries on the Fish Houses poem, but we have eliminated the major portion of them, since your lack of punctuation is purposeful and adds to your effect. Will you please study the few commas now suggested and see whether you approve? I only left in the ones I thought would really help the reader, but you may not agree. In this case, it should be as you want it. Sincerely, Catherine S. White. February 28th. Dear Mrs. White, I think the proof looks very nice, and thank you for your help with the punctuation. I have left in all your changes except the commas between cold, dark, deep that occurs twice. For some reason or other, it seems more liquid to me without them, and I think in this case the sense is plain enough without them, don't you? I noticed that quite a few tales of P's and Y's, etc., are missing, but I imagine that is just because it's proof. Also, thank you for Miss Bogan's number. She was very nice. Sincerely yours, Elizabeth Bishop. July 8th. Dear Sir, I have just this minute realized that there is a bad mistake in my poem At the Fish Houses, which you are going to publish sometime this summer. I've already corrected proof for the poem and only hope it is still possible to make these two very necessary corrections. I refer to layers of codfish scales stuck to the tubs, etc., when actually codfish have rather negligible scales, and it was herring scales that I meant. They fished for both fish at the place I had in mind, and the scales of both were everywhere, but only herring scales would produce the effect that particularly struck me. Lines 21 and 22 should read, "The big fish tubs are completely lined with layers of beautiful herring scales and," etc. I hope it is not too late to make these changes, and I am very sorry to have been so careless. Thinking that Mrs. White may be away, I am addressing this to the poetry editor and hope that it will reach the right person as soon as possible. My address will be the one above for the next 3 weeks at least. Very truly yours, Elizabeth Bishop. At the Fish Houses. Although it is a cold evening, down by one of the fish houses, an old man sits netting his net in the gloaming, almost invisible, a dark purple-brown, and his shuttle worn and polished. The air smells so strong of codfish, it makes one's nose run and one's eyes water. The five fish houses have steeply peaked roofs and narrow, cleated gangplanks slant up to storerooms in the gables for the wheelbarrows to be pushed up and down on. All is silver, the heavy surface of the sea, swelling slowly as if considering spilling over, is opaque, but the silver of the benches, the lobster pots and masts, scattered among the wild, jagged rocks, is of an apparent translucence, like the small old buildings with an emerald moss growing on their shoreward walls. The big fish tubs are completely lined with layers of beautiful herring scales, and the wheelbarrows are similarly plastered with creamy, iridescent coats of mail, with small iridescent flies crawling on them. Up on the little slope behind the houses, set in the sparse, bright sprinkle of grass, is an ancient wooden capstan, cracked, with two long bleached handles and some melancholy stains like dried blood, where the ironwork has rusted. The old man accepts a lucky strike. He was a friend of my grandfather. We talk of the decline in the population and of codfish and herring while he waits for a herring boat to come in. There are sequins on his vest and on his thumb. He has scraped the scales, the principal beauty, from unnumbered fish with that black old knife, the blade of which is almost worn away. Down at the water's edge, at the place where they haul up the boats, up the long ramp descending into the water, thin silver tree trunks are laid horizontally across gray stones, down and down, at intervals of 4 or 5 feet. Cold, dark, deep, and absolutely clear, element bearable to no mortal, to fish and to seals. One seal, particularly, I have seen here evening after evening. He was curious about me. He was interested in music, like me, a believer in total immersion. So I used to sing him Baptist hymns. I also sang, "A Mighty Fortress is Our God." He stood up in the water and regarded me steadily, moving his head a little. Then he would disappear, then suddenly emerge, almost in the same spot, with a sort of shrug, as if it were against his better judgment. Cold, dark, deep, and absolutely clear, the clear, gray, icy water. Back behind us, the dignified, tall firs begin. Bluish, associating with their shadows, a million Christmas trees stand, waiting for Christmas. The water seems suspended above the rounded gray and blue-gray stones. I have seen it over and over, the same sea, the same slightly and differently swinging above the stones, icily free above the stones and then the world. If you should dip your hand in, your wrist would ache immediately, your bones would begin to ache, and your hand would burn, as if the water were a transmutation of fire that feeds on stones and burns with a dark gray flame. If you tasted it, it would first taste bitter, then briny, then surely burn your tongue. It is like what we imagine knowledge to be, dark, salt, clear, moving, utterly free, drawn from the cold, hard mouth of the world, derived from the rocky breasts forever, flowing and drawn, and since our knowledge is historical, flowing and flown.